The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 154. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me. We are in the Casa de Cole Coffee on a beautiful March afternoon in Las Vegas. And special guest with
us. Special, extra special guest.
Oh, wow.
ESPN and Five Rounds podcast, Brett Okamoto.
I mean.
That's what ESPN stands for, extra special podcast.
Don't go there.
Let him finish. Let him finish.
Don't go there.
Give him a second.
Don't go there.
Give him a second.
Named.
Man, I got to tell you, any of the listeners out there who have ever wondered about this podcast, the service of the MMA Roadshow is absolutely spectacular. I haven't even finished half of a beer yet, and another cracked cold one is sat right in front of me.
Where is
I can't even get through half of a beer before the next one is in front of me, and that's the type of service you want to find in Las Vegas. I feel like, right?
Agent H handling business over there. It is, since we are in Las Vegas, of course, it is a Ballast Point
home game.
This right here that we're drinking today.
I was thinking we should have like bells and whistles.
Okay. Our production values seemingly get worse every week somehow.
Improving over time.
Human
sound effects? That's actually like bringing it back. That's like old school.
Great.
Like, you know how like in the old school radio days, it'd be like, he'd have like a little xylophone, like ding, ding, ding. That was Ken right there, man. That was good.
That's amazing. All right, well, we are having Aloha Scope, and this is a hazy India Pale Ale. By the way, bro, I'm told this has only been on the streets of Las Vegas for a week. Only for
Boom.
A week, and we already got it on the road show for the Ballast Point home game.
That's how we do
Cole
it.
Cole Coffee, tell us a little bit more about this tasty Aloha Sculpin.
I will. With Aloha Sculpin, they use Bruxtois yeast. Yeah, y'all say that. Try to spell it. It's even harder. To turn their award-winning IPA into a tropical oasis. Yeah. With bright and refreshing notes of mango, pineapple, and guava. I could definitely taste the pineapple. I tasted the pineapple.
The guava is strong for me.
The guava is strong?
Yeah, it stands out.
Yeah. The yeast also adds a slight haze to the beer, and it creates the best part, a smooth mouthfeel.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. To round out its juicy character. Simply put, this is paradise in the palm of your hands. Thank you, Ballast Point. It is.
This is paradise. Solid. First time we're tasting
today. I got some
today.
Serious mouthfeels going on right now. I have to tell you. And that is the best.
Absolutely expert palates here. Like I was on board with Tropic. I was tasting some Tropic notes. Right. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I taste the guava.
Guava's
you guys drink more beer than I do,
what does a guava taste like? I'm not even sure if I've ever eaten a guava.
I don't even know what a guava
looks
like. Is that
the little green one?
I was just trying to sound like, you know, intelligent and
Well, you have good. You have good. Good. Info, because you reached out to Anthony, best brewer in the world, first to get an explanation of how to actually say the Bruxtois. I was trying to go online and try to find it, and I got a mixed bag of what you pronounce it. But that was it's good shit, man. This is really, really good, and I love the fact that we're getting it before anybody else is.
That's
here in
up.
Vegas. So if you find the Aloha Sculpin in your area, go out and get it. The Sculpins are a good line. There's a few different ones. This one's what, 7%?
7%.
Yeah, man. So it's no joke. A hazy India Pale Ale.
So let me tell you about the importance of today, because Brett Okamoto, if you don't know, longtime Las Vegas resident, just like myself. Brett Okamoto spends a lot of time on the road as well. Okay, we have had beverages of the adult variety on multiple continents around the world, mm-hmm. and yet for reasons that really, well, basically boiled down to me being kind of a homebody when I'm in Las Vegas because I have a family.
Sure.
We've never really had a chance to go out and just hang out. We've never had a beer in Las Vegas. And thankfully, I'm on vacation this week, and you reached out, and you were like, hey, we need to make that happen. And I said, you know what? This works out perfect. We're going to make you work for it. We're going to make you sit down and put on a pair of headphones and talk some MMA.
I asked to drink beer, and then Morgan put me to work. But no, man, we go way back to the days when the road show was literally like just a handful of people, man.
Yep.
Like I mean, nowadays it is a traveling circus.
I mean,
there's a lot of people, which is great. I mean, you see, 20, 30 people that you're used to seeing on the road every single UFC card somehow, because they're every weekend. But yeah, back in the day, pay-per-view a month. And it'd be just a handful of people, man. And it was a different time. And yeah, we drank around the world, as you say, Japan.
Yep.
Mexico City. I believe I was on this very show on Mexico City.
We drink a lot in Mexico City.
But for some reason, when Morgan and I get back to Vegas, we live like literally 5 seconds from each other. But we're like, nah, we're good. We don't even see each other when we're actually home.
We need to finally make that happen. It's good, having a kid does that to you. Of course, you got married along the way too, so. We've all kind of grown into family, man. You got kids on the way soon or what?
I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Damn, that's a heavy question to throw out.
I know, right off
the bat.
Breaking
news, right off the bat.
Can we get a few more ballast points before we get into the hard stuff?
All right. Well, let's talk about some MMA. Right before you got here, Brett, I want to say they broke the news. The UFC finally made official that Cyborg and Raquel Pennington are going to fight in Brazil. I'm a little bit shocked by this, to be honest with you. I didn't have it on my list to talk about this, but I wanted to get your opinion. I think you have a level head on you when it comes to matchmaking and plans and all those things. And I don't want to disrespect Raquel Pennington whatsoever, man. She's a gritty fighter that has, really kind of turned things around. Her career is on a nice roll. And I think she definitely has earned that spot. And you always hate when somebody has a title shot granted to them and then some kind of freak injury pulls it away from him. And I'm not saying that I definitely or that I wanted her to lose that title shot or whatever, but I thought Dana White sat up there the other night after UFC 222 and said, hey, to me right now, Cyborg and Amanda Nunes is the fight to make. And I gotta say, I'm on board with them because I don't feel like there's any contenders at 145 that are being left behind. I mean, and no, again, no offense to Raquel Pennington, I'm not saying that she wasn't there, but she'll still be there. And I do feel like Amanda Nunes is the fight to make. And if for whatever reason Raquel Pennington is able to beat Amanda Nunes, I'm not signing up for Raquel Pennington Cyborg. Like, that doesn't make sense. So I feel like we're risking a fight here that we don't need to risk. Am I being crazy?
Well, you are being a little crazy because you said Cyborg Pennington, and it's even written on your notes, Cyborg Pennington. No, it's actually Nunes Pennington.
Nunes Pennington. Sorry about that.
Everybody, everybody listening knows that. We've known each other long enough. I got to call
you. Thank
you
for making. Well, that way I don't have to sound like an idiot. The Aloha Sculpins have been fantastic this
7%,
afternoon.
We had a few. There was some pre-gaming happening.
No, you're right. Nunes Pennington.
Nunes Pennington at UFC 224. And here's really the bottom line on this, as far as I'm concerned. Is I am in total agreement with you. Dana White, it's very clear that he says this is the fight to make, right? Amanda Nunes versus Chris Cyborg. I agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
Cyborg, there's not really a whole long list of females to challenge her. And they're all bantamweights anyway. I mean, let's just drop the shtick of, the featherweight division exists. It does not exist.
Right.
The UFC has not put on a featherweight fight other than a title fight. This was means to an end to promote Cyborg, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not even going to bash the promotion for doing that. They needed a way to market Chris Cyborg as a star, so they created a division that essentially does not exist. The fact of Amanda Nunes fighting Pennington, I think, brings up another issue, and that is the UFC just putting on too many pay-per-views? Because when you have a pay-per-view every month and you want to headline a pay-per-view every month with a title fight, that means that you are committed to somehow scrounging together a title fight every month. And what we've seen is that that's not always really the case.
Right.
Is that they sort of have to pull one out of nowhere. And they're not doing that with this. That they're not pulling this out of nowhere. Raquel Pennington, like you mentioned, is completely deserving of a title shot. But if they weren't putting on a pay-per-view every month and they weren't obligated to say, hey, we're going to Rio and we need a main event for this, they probably would not be putting on this fight. They probably would be just waiting to set up the super fight. And so it kind of sets up this double-edged sword where it's like we have consistent events and just the idea of having an event down in Rio in May, that's a great idea, but we need a main event for it.
And you prefer a Brazilian headliner in Brazil, obviously.
So you're forced to react short-term instead of long-term. Mm-hmm. And long-term, what is the best fight? It's Cyborg versus Nunes right now.
I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head there. And it kind of walks me into what I wanted to ask you about as well, is before we kind of had this breaking news of the Cyborg-Pennington fight.
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
I got to get back to my computer, man. There's all kinds of crazy stuff happening. But, Cyborg-Pennington.
What a common idiot. All right. But listen, no, you know, I did want to ask you about this. Is so here we are. We have this week off, right? The reason we're hanging out this week is so we have a week off. And it's nice, right? I mean, it's nice to have a little break in the action. But I do wonder kind of what you think. I mean, because all the discussion lately has been, is it too many events? And it's kind of weird because I do feel like more events aren't necessarily a bad thing. Like, I don't even really have a problem with weekly events if you want to do weekly events. I mean, I thought that the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series was fun, where we had 8 straight weeks of that. When we had the Ultimate Fighter Live back in the day and you had a couple of fights. I mean, I could do with shorter cards, maybe not 13, 14 fights every single week, but I'm not one of those guys that feels like there necessarily needs to be less events. I think more programming and more slots for people to fight and build themselves isn't necessarily a bad thing. I know you're a baseball fan, a Colorado Rockies guys. I've never heard anybody, I mean, not seriously, say, we need to have less than 162 games. You know what I mean? But I will say this, pay-per-views. Maybe there's too many pay-per-views, right? Like, maybe – so. What do you think? The argument about too many events, and then maybe, as you said, when you're being forced to matchmake in a way that doesn't necessarily make sense for divisions, it just makes sense for TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think, you know, for a long time, everybody has been talking about oversaturation and whether or not that's a thing or not. And I think, like, in this day and age, when you've got ESPN getting ready to start ESPN Plus, a digital streaming platform that they need content. Mm. You have Amazon entering negotiations with the UFC. You have Fox, you know, launching Fox Go. I don't think that there's necessarily this need to scale back on content because content is still king, mm-hmm. and people are willing to pay for content. They need, like, it used to be, you know, I come from ESPN, obviously. I've been there for 7-8 years, and it's like, oh, we have this much time to fill. We have this much time to fill. We have, like, a, you know, an hour-long sports center. We have this or this or this, you know. And in the summer, it's like sports slow down, so we have time to fill, et cetera, et cetera. That's not really the case anymore. Time is just – it doesn't exist anymore. The platform is the platform. You watch it when you want to watch it.
Right.
And so I think that to all of a sudden scale back on content is foolish. It's not what you want to offer these different networks. One plus about the UFC is that they are a fight company, but they're a media company. They're a content.
That's it right there.
They're a content creator.
It's a media company.
However, what you mentioned, a pay-per-view every month, I just don't think in this day and age that people are necessarily getting on board with paying $70 a month to watch a pay-per-view that has been watered down. And I think that you can almost reinvigorate the pay-per-view market by saying, you know what, we're going to have 4 UFC pay-per-views a year.
Wow.
Almost like a WWE situation, you know? And I'm not a WWE fan, so forgive me if I get this wrong. But what do you have? You got Royal Rumble. You got WrestleMania. You've got – what are the other two? There's two other
SummerSlam,
ones.
SummerSlam, is that one?
SummerSlam,
that's one. Because I'm not a WWE guy either, so I apologize.
Get people to get excited about buying a pay-per-view rather than being like, oh, I have to buy a pay-per-view. If I want to watch – so a title fight this month, I have to pay for pay-per-view. No, be like, oh man, like I just one more month until the next UFC pay-per-view where I know I'm getting 2 title fights, I'm getting this, that, or whatever. Create some buzz around them again. That used to be what the feeling was around some of these UFC pay-per-views, and now they're so rare and they're so committed to like having to have one every month that they're sort of throwing things together. How many times have we seen a situation in which UFC is like, just trying to find its main event.
An interim title fight made out of need.
That's not how a pay-per-view should be. You shouldn't be trying to find a main event. You should be like, this is our kick-ass main event that we are providing to our fans for only $70.
I agree. Yeah. I hope that whoever they end up with in their new TV deal can make that work financially and can appreciate that as well, and the UFC can make that work as well. I mean, we've seen the investor documents. I think the UFC realizes they don't necessarily want to be on that roller coaster ride of pay-per-views up and down. But, you know, this week – so I say I'm cool with weekly events. I'm fine. If we want to do a card every week, I'm cool with that. But I will say this. Having a week off like this – it has allowed for guys like Sean O'Malley, for Mackenzie Dern, even for Brian Ortega, who's a relatively new face to a lot of people, to kind of get that afterburn, you know what I mean, to kind of get that build afterwards. Sometimes I feel like we're moving so fast in this that normally, I mean, if this was a normal week, you know, we'd be talking about whatever the next event is. Yeah. Instead, fortunately, we're, you know, fucking up headlines because we've had too many Aloha Scopins. But, you know.
Well, I think, and then that goes to show, like, there's a lot of times when you go to work an event because there's so many events, somebody's like, what's on the card? Who else do you like on the card? You're like, oh, shit, well, let me look.
Oh, you got to think about
it. I haven't even had a chance to look, you know, and that's – it's unfortunate, but maybe that's a fortunate thing that we're lucky enough that there is so many events that we don't have to, you know, prepare or wait for so long for new stuff to come at us. It's we're constantly being bombarded. But in the same sense, you know, we don't get the buildup. We don't get that longing that you, when you wait for an event. You know, if you only got an event once every, say, 2 or 3 weeks, there's a buildup. There's an anticipation. There's an excitement level that sort of builds. And right now with, I think, this whole, in a sense, oversaturation, the fact that it kind of becomes just like a constant noise that you don't really think about, that half the time you find yourself ignoring it because there's just so much until you're forced to kind of pay attention.
Well, it's not just us, too. I mean, even think, you know, there's always criticism about the UFC's ability to build stars. I mean, we're all very close with UFC staff because we all live here in Las Vegas. You can see, I mean, they're struggling. You know, you think about, like, the PR teams, the marketing teams. They're struggling sometimes to keep their head above water. I mean, when you're going from weekly event to weekly event to weekly event, they're not necessarily long-term planning and big-picture thinking. I mean, they're grinding just to keep their head above water. And that's what I think, honestly, a huge problem is when the UFC gets criticized for not building stars the right way. I don't think people realize, first of all, you can't just pick somebody and be like, you know, Brett, you're going to be a star. You know what I mean? It does have to happen a little bit organically. I don't think you can necessarily just completely manufacture stars. But if the UFC is falling short sometimes, I think it's just because they're so damn busy trying to keep up with things that sometimes the big picture gets lost.
That's and I will speak as just for a former employee on that side. When it came to typical week-to-week stuff, there's so much stuff coming at you. You can't look. You don't have the forethought or the chance to really look 2, 3, 4 weeks out in advance because you're constantly, what is this week? What is due this week? What do we need to look at? You know, we did talk to Fiasco and some of the guys talking about, you know, they would actually get together and be like,
the Pepsi guy?
Yeah, the Pepsi guy. Who are these stars? Who are the people that we should focus on? And they were almost asking us.
Right.
Like, who are you guys think are the people? Because they're trying to look at it, but literally they're so busy and so swamped with the day-to-day that they have to do just to cover that week that they don't have the luxury half the time to really look to look at the people ahead, to have actually the time to actually breathe, to look, to think ahead. And it sucks because it's those people, it's those guys that are actually doing it. You know, I mean, we know Shelby, we know these cats are looking always at these guys. They're always out there grabbing new talent. They're always going and getting new things, but they're not putting the promo pieces together. They're not putting the other, you know, all these pieces together that really help bring these people up. I think the problem there is it's the lack of communication when it comes to, say, even roster changes. I remember all of a sudden, you know, there was never any big, like, fanfare to do when fighters got let go. Mm-hmm. You kind of just found out that fighters got let go. You know, say if you had a project in mind, you're like, oh, I want to work with this part. I have a video, this idea of Pat Barry. Oh, I can't wait to do it. And then one day I walk through a hallway. I know, whatever. I just pulled Pat Barry. But that's exactly it. Because I remember one day shooting an interview in the studio and then walking out in the hallway and there was a box. I remember taking a picture. I never shared it because I thought it was just – I thought it would be kind of callous on my part. But it was like fighters that were cut or no longer – I forget what the name on the box was. But it was something as cut and dry as released fighter, whatever, and seeing all these folders of all these names. And I remember thinking like, holy shit, this guy's no longer with us. This guy's no longer with us. There's no communication all the way through the organization of who's there, who's coming, who's still around. You know, half the time, I mean, I know guys that come to us, me now, and say, oh, I get the news of whatever from you guys. I'm like, you're internal. How can you possibly be getting the news?
I think that's a big problem. You know? The company's getting so big. I mean, like you said, the Shelby, the Maynards of the world, they understand who the talent is, who they're picking up. But does that necessarily mean that the people running editorial at USC.com get it? Does that mean that the people at PR understand that the guy that's on the prelims today is somebody that we believe down the road could be a huge, you know,
megastar?
And imagine,
like, and Shelby's not going to be like, oh, hey, yeah, reach out to me. Ask me every day who these people, because he's already got so much shit going on. It's not like they could ever be like, hey, Sean, can we just sit you down let's spotlight 3 to 5 people a week or a day. When you have a roster that's over, what, 400, 500 people that's constantly evolving, it would be a nonstop full-time job just for him to kind of give the heads up on who should I look at? Who's this? I mean, he would never, ever get to it, you know? So it's tough. I think that's what the best part, and I think that's an eventual job of what provides a function for what us as media do is to find these people. Because I feel like the promotion itself is never going to do the job that's needed. They're never going to do it at a level that's best suited for the fighters to give them that notice. So I just wish that maybe they provide better access for us to gain maybe access to the roster.
You're
to
a
look.
Selfish videographer.
I am a selfish videographer.
Well, I will say this, though, like because you guys do a great job at Junkie of getting video of every single person on the card. But what started off this conversation was, are there too many cards? And I think it's there's plus and minuses like anything in this world, right? When you are having a card every week, it is just hard to get people to care about them.
Yeah.
And it used to be that, you know, in the absence of a card every single weekend, it did open the door of, like, even as a fan, it allowed you to be like, okay, there's not something like going on this weekend, so there's a card up ahead like 2 weeks from now. And it just allowed you to invest a little bit more. Like, I remember prelim fights did used to mean a little bit more. Like, if a guy was going through something, like Ronny Yahya had an amazing story recently, mm-hmm. right? His mother passed away.
Yep.
He's trying to deal with that in a fight camp. 5 years ago, that's a big story.
Right.
And people are paying attention to that, and they're like, oh, my God, this guy's mother passed away during his camp.
He goes to deal with the funeral and still keeps the fight on.
Yep. That's an incredible story.
Amazing.
Right?
Based on the fact that there's a card every weekend and there's 12 fights on every single card, that got buried, you know?
Very quickly.
And again, I'm still sitting here saying that if you're Amazon out there and the UFC is bringing you a content package of saying, like, hey, we can bring you an event every single weekend, and we can bring you, you know, this preview show based on that event, and we are just going to light you up with content, I'm sure that's attractive to a media company like Amazon.
Looking at how many hours can you provide me?
However, it just makes it far more difficult, and then, you know, the whole Reebok thing comes into deal with everybody looks the same, and it's just like, it is so hard to stand out in this sport. And I spoke about, like, I wrote about that with Mackenzie Dern and Sean O'Malley and Brian Ortega even, and I was like, the narrative that you're hearing out there in the sports world, and I get this at the ESPN all the time, is you know, I'll talk to people at ESPN, and they're like, well, where are the stars coming up? Where are they? I'm like, well, here's three potential ones.
Right.
However, you know, these guys go out, and Mackenzie Dern won her fight, and I was actually impressed by her because she was unable to get it to the ground and do what she wanted to do, but she dug deep.
Right.
She showed a winner's mentality.
Yep.
That's what you want out of a prospect, a 24-year-old prospect who is still developing her skills and is raw and is not going to look good in a lot of different situations. Here is a woman who found, you know, and she's fighting someone in Ashley Yoder who is highly motivated to beat her.
Yep.
And she found a way to win. And it wasn't always pretty, but she found a way to win. I think that's impressive, but immediately a lot of people are like, oh, that you know, all that hype was for nothing. And I think that's a very
so
difficult
tough.
Thing that this sport is dealing with is the need to provide a lot of content to the highest bidder. But when you do that, you drown out a lot, you set very high expectations, and you set a situation where it is so hard to break out. So where are all the stars? They're there, but it's just hard for them to break out.
So I did a radio spot earlier today with a station up in Washington, and one of the things they asked me was, what has O'Malley been rushed too much, right? Like, are they rushing this guy too quick? You know, he's 23 years old. He went straight from Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series to a main card slot, a tough finale, to a pay-per-view, and they love him. And, of course, he's got the Snoop Dogg thing and the Dana White thing. And the question was, has he been pushed too much? And I said, listen, the way I see things is, if you're the UFC, you have to push guys quickly, right? I mean, even Conor McGregor has only had 10 UFC fights, right? I mean, you don't have a choice because everybody in the sport loses. Everybody in the sport loses. And I don't think you have the luxury because you're right. Everybody is looking for that new star. And it's hard to get people that are on the Conor McGregor level, the Ronda Rousey level, the Brock Lesnar level. Like, that's tough. But I feel like if you're the UFC, you don't have a choice but to push people quickly, because I think you got to have people kind of be a shooting star. And yes, maybe they'll crash to earth at some point, but I just feel like you got to catch that lightning in a bottle when you can, because I don't think this is a kind of sport where you can necessarily like slow burn people to the top.
Yeah, it's true. And the counterpoint, or a part of that, I remember when the UFC years back, that was their whole justification of why they were going to have fight nights, why they were going to have on Foxes, and why they're going to have pay-per-views. And it was supposed to be a tiered level of how they were going to build fighters right up. You know, they'd start on the fight nights, and then eventually they'd move to the Foxes. And then, you know, when they're ready for the big time, they would go to the pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. And then you see guys like, yeah, like an O'Malley, which makes sense, where he should have been doing, if they followed that tier, he would have been on a fight night, then he would have worked through Fox, and then he would have went to the pay-per-view. Whereas here, they got fast-tracked. Dern got fast-tracked. She made her debut on a pay-per-view, where if they stuck to this model that they thought was going to help promote these fighters and push them up, she would have started on fight night. And that was part of it, I think, was to build value in why fight nights needed to be, you know, why Foxes still need to be, and they need to have these sort of things. So it's weird. I still feel like the UFC is still trying to figure it out themselves. You know, they get these ideas of how they thought be the best way to build these fighters, and then they get to the point where they realize, oh, hey, this person has marketability. Fuck it. We got to throw him on the pay-per-view.
Well, look, I mean, a guy like Ortega. I mean, Ortega is a guy that's kind of been slow build, right? I mean, if anything, he's been a slower burn. Now, that move has gotten really fast lately. Yeah. But he's been around for a while, and, of course, he had the suspension to start out with, so that may have been part of the false start or whatever. But, I mean, I think all of us sitting here in this room right now, we can say, dude, Ortega Holloway can't wait for that fight. It's amazing. But for the casual fan who, let's be honest, makes up the majority of the audience,
right. Yeah.
There's probably more excitement around Dern and O'Malley right now than there is around Ortega, right?
It's interesting.
Maybe.
I mean, I think that's what ultimately, I think what some of these like Foxes or fight nights might be to explain for the casuals. You know, like if it's a matter of taking Ortega, maybe he should have headlined a fight night somewhere, if it makes sense when he, you know, right now he's already been sort of fast-tracked. It doesn't make sense now when everybody's like, he's the next guy that's challenging. Is there a way at some point to realize, all right, this is a rising star. We have to throw him on a headline, because then somebody's like, oh, this person's headlined a card. I have to pay attention now. Whereas now they're like, I don't know. I just know he's beat this guy. This guy, he's undefeated. And
well,
I guess.
There's another case of how sometimes the UFC's need to fill a pay-per-view every month is hurting them.
Right.
Because why was Brian Ortega fighting Frankie Edgar on UFC 222?
Because they needed a fighter. They had to scrap the pay-per-view.
Because they had to figure out a solution to their pay-per-view after Max Holloway got hurt. I mean, in order to build Brian Ortega the best, in an ideal world, forget everything else, in an ideal world, where would Brian Ortega have defeated Frankie Edgar? On free television.
Yes.
On a networked television. Here's, you got a guy who's 27, who's finishing all his fights, got a great story. Where do you want that to take place?
Fox
do you want
event,
it to take
Fox
place
Coleman.
on a pay-per-view that Chris Cyborg and Yana Kuneskaya is headlining? No, you want it to take place on a fight night.
Yep.
And in UFC's defense, they explored that. They wanted Ortega to fight in Orlando on February 24th. But here again, it's just like, well, we got to fill a pay-per-view. Brian Ortega will fill in. And it's like,
Frankie Edgar, a legend of the sport, ultimately kind of gets dicked over because he's man enough to step up and take a fight that he really shouldn't have had to take.
No, he shouldn't have had to take. And honestly, I think Max is at a detriment in this situation as well, because he kind of misses out on the Frankie rub. I mean, a lot of what builds a star is like, you got to beat legends. You beat a bunch of legends. How did Jon Jones get so big? He stormed through all those legends, man. Yeah. Shogun,
Boy,
Rampage, Rashad Evans. Now Max Holloway, what? He beat Jose Aldo twice, one of which was on short notice because Frankie Edgar got hurt. You know, it's like the UFC's strategic building is dictated by their schedule, not by their talent. It should be the other way around.
Such a great
It should
point.
Be like, you have talent, how should we build it? Yep. No, their entire fucking program is built on, we have a schedule, how do we fill that schedule? And it's backwards.
I hadn't even considered that, man. That's such a great point, because you talk about, you know, if Holloway does beat Ortega, all of us sitting here are going to be like, oh, my God, that was an impressive victory. But most people are going to go, this Ortega guy wasn't all we thought he was going to be.
Right.
But if he beats Frankie Edgar, the man, the answer, the legend that's been around, you get that rub. Man, I hadn't even considered that. You're so right. That costs Max Holloway.
Yeah, well, and especially if Frankie and Brian was the main event of even of a random-ass fight night somewhere, that would be – that victory right there, not only does it build Brian, but also, I mean, even though a loss is a loss when it comes to Frankie, but to lose a headline event as opposed to losing a co-main slot, I think still carries more weight and it pushes – more props back onto Frankie. I mean, not that we all need to push props. Everybody knows what Frankie is. But the fact that if going into for the casuals, if seeing Brian Ortega as a victory, winning the main event of even a random ass whatever event, going into a Max Holloway event, the casuals, I mean, I don't know how many times you probably hear multiple people that are like, why is this guy? Who's this guy?
Yeah.
Has he been the main event? I mean, I hear people all the time that are like, well, I don't see the event
a lot, but not.
Well, yeah, but that's the people that know it. But I mean, like, people want to see. They want to see the name. They want to see what event was he the main? Whatever. Yeah. Anytime somebody gets near the top, they want to see these multiple references of the person being the event with their name.
Right.
The event, their name. You know, so it sucks that they don't take the time. And you're right. I think it's a great point where they're instead of being focused around the stars, put them on events that could be maybe a smaller card, like a fight night card for, say, even like Tisha Torres. Like if that was a fight night main event or something,
that would have been a good spot.
You know, it
would
have been a better spot to where even if you take a loss, you still lost a main event as opposed to losing whatever, you know.
That would have been a good main event.
It sucks that, you know, with the way that their schedule is being built, that so many of these fighters, as opposed to what's the best trajectory path for them to where whether a win or a loss, they still maintain momentum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so many of these guys are getting thrown to the wolves in a sense because they have to fill a schedule gap so that they lose the story arc. You know, they lose. And if it's about a story arc for each particular character, then it gets a little bit better.
Look at Yuna Kuna. Yana. I keep calling her Yuna. Yana Kuniskaya. Look at Yana. She just lost to Cyborg in the main event. She was part of she headlined a UFC pay-per-view.
Yeah.
What do you think her next fight will be? It'll be buried.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be buried somewhere.
Yeah.
No one knows who Yana Kunikaya. No one knows who
No one says her name right either. No.
That may be the ballast.
In fairness, you didn't report Cyborg Pennington, so it's okay.
Yeah. So I haven't done the dumbest thing on this podcast yet. Yet. A couple more Yunas and I will. But that's the thing. Like, Yana, no one knows anything about her.
Yeah,
after that fight, she headlined a UFC pay-per-view. No one knows her. Her next fight will be buried somewhere on some pay-per-view prelim or
a random fight
prelim.
Night in the middle. Yeah.
You know, it's just there's no long-term thinking because it all has to be short-term because they have a schedule to fill. Like, if Sean Shelby was sitting right here telling us how is he filling his schedule, he's like, I'm just trying to get by. I'm trying to put these fights together. I'm trying to fill these events.
Save the events, yeah.
You're putting Sean Shelby, your matchmaker, into a position where his main goal is to just – fill.
Yeah.
Don't fill. Build. You know, promote. That's what it is. And that's a problem. And again, I don't think there's necessarily too many cards, but they have to address this somehow because the way it's working is you're not building anything. You're just putting together fights in the hope that someone crazy like Brian Ortega, who, you know, don't forget, has been very close to losing a lot.
Oh, yeah.
He has been on the verge of defeat so many times. And he has somehow risen to it because of skill and a little bit of luck.
Yep.
You know, so that's what you're hoping for in terms of building a star. And that is it. I guess it's one way to build a star, but it's probably not the best way to build one.
So, Brett, I wanted to ask you, I mean, working for ESPN, you know, I don't know if people can tell by your coverage or not, but, I mean, you're a fight fan. You get the sport, you understand the sport, and you follow all the stories in the sport, you know what I mean? But you're only allowed so much space. It's not MMA Junkie where we can write about every single fighter on the card. You know, you're just not granted that opportunity. So I wanted to kind of ask you what it is, because we're talking about building stars, and we're talking about focus and that sort of thing. How do you go about picking who you're focusing on, what stories you write? Because I saw, and I will say this was kind of cool, you know, maybe again because we had this extra week here, but, you know, you got a chance to go back and do a follow-up with Andre Sukumtat, who wasn't even a star or a winner, you know, but you know, you're picking an angle that's incredibly interesting and that was fun. So I just wonder, I mean, you're trying to balance, I guess, the biggest names possible, but I know you're somebody that gets some of the sub-stories that are brewing under the surface. How do you go about your gig with ESPN of picking – who gets that big shine of that ESPN spotlight?
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of rocket science into it. You cover the main events, and quite frankly, if I'm being totally honest, some of the main events are, as you know, they're fights that we would have seen on the prelims
right.
a while back, you know, but they're main events, and every fighter has a story. I mean, all these guys are interesting. You very, very rarely, in case you run into a situation where a fighter's having like a bad weight cut or they're just like, you know, in a bad mood or something, you very rarely run into a situation in which a fighter just gives you absolutely nothing to write about, you know, as you know, and as Junkie knows, and that's why they put out stories on all these guys, because there is a story to tell about all of them.
Yep.
At ESPN, it's about... it's about covering the home runs as you could probably guess. But like you said, man, I mean ESPN is it opens up doors because it's ESPN, and it is the only sport that I cover, and I'm right here in Vegas. So it's probably what most people would expect. I mean, I'm trying to find the biggest stories. I'm constantly chasing news like everybody else,
yep.
like any other reporter. And I'm trying to find the best stories, and a lot of these guys do have great stories. And it's just about trying. My biggest challenge probably is that I am the only writer at ESPN,
right?
And so there is just a certain amount of obligation to, oh, there's a fight this weekend, so what do we have about this fight? But then trying to circle back on the cases, you know, that you brought up, you know, just not letting these stories. Because there's great stuff that happens every weekend.
Yeah.
There's great stuff that happens every weekend, and then we never circle back. We always just move on to the next fight night.
Right.
You know? And Bellator's got a card on Friday, and UFC has a card on Saturday,
yeah, right?
And there's no time to appreciate. The product of mixed martial arts has never been better.
Right.
It's so good. The evolution of the sport has been great. There used to be, and there still are, there used to be prelim fights, though, in the UFC that were just god-awful, and there still are, occasionally, but every night you have multiple fights that you want to see, and that matter, and that are relevant, but they don't feel like it sometimes the next week, because no one's talking about them. They're only,
yeah.
you know, they're talking about the next event.
You said something perfect there, and I wanted to touch on it later, but I'll ask it now. I mean, I feel like what's really been interesting about the first part of this year and then kind of this week after last week is that there's been this narrative that, like, MMA is at its worst point ever, right? The UFC, the popularity is trailing off. There's no stars. Nobody cares about the sport. Viewership is down. I still argue that a little bit because I do believe domestically it's tailing off, but I believe internationally there's still a lot of opportunities and growth and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I've seen some stories this week about, oh my gosh, look at all the young talent that's coming into the UFC. So it's felt like this weird battle, like, oh my God, you know, the mixed martial arts and UFC is tailing off. And I couldn't disagree more. Now, I'm not a viewership expert. I'm not going to pretend to have like all the ratings numbers and all the pay-per-view sales and all that. But I feel like, I don't know if the popularity is necessarily tailing off, but I do feel like, as you just said, man, I mean, there are monsters coming up in every gym around the world right now that have been, like, you know, training since they were kids and that understand now, too, that this is a sport not just about wins and losses, but it's a sport about entertainment. You know, it's about, you know, being a guy that's not afraid to wag your hands down low a little bit, that's not afraid to throw some spinning shit, you know what I mean? That's not afraid to put on a show as well as just grind a dude into the ground and hold him down for 15 minutes. So, as you said, I feel like globally – I mean, damn, KSW's putting on some good shows. Fight Nights Global's putting on – I mean, they're finding talent in these far-flung areas. I feel like the sport has never been better in terms of talent. So it's just been kind of an interesting, you know, balance between those two narratives that the UFC is sucking or MMA is sucking, but yet the talent is better than it's ever been. How have you kind of interpreted the way this year has started?
I don't know. I just said, as you agreed with, that the product has never been better. I do think that there are just systematic problems with the way it's set up.
Right.
And that's leading to a difficulty in creating stars and having guys stand out. I don't know, man. I you and I, we're all sitting here talking about these problems, right? These problems we can identify. I don't know what the solution is, though. Honestly don't.
Yeah.
I think you got to give all these fighters opportunities. And by having a lot of shows, you're giving these fighters opportunities. So that's good. But, I mean, if no one – if my friends, my brother, my family, like if I brought up to them, like, 10 names in the UFC that I'm slightly excited about. Do I think that any of them know what those names are?
Probably right. not.
No.
Right.
And it did not used to be that way. Yeah. It used to be like you would bring up a couple names, the top names, and people would be like, oh, yeah, I know that guy.
I know Tito Ortiz.
I might not be able to recite his resume to you, but I know that. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
That's why, like Bellator is able to pull ratings on these guys because you know, UFC has to figure out how to get back to that. They have to find a way to get back to, like, we need 20 guys who people are excited about, you know? I mean, the casual fans, they just don't know who these guys are, which is unfortunate because they're very talented. And they got great stories, but
so I mean, like, booking a Krokop versus Nelson, for instance. As weird as that sounds, like, I mean, I kind of get, I mean, Bellator does good views when Tito fights. They'll do amazing views. If 50-year-old Chuck Liddell comes back and fights, they'll do amazing views.
Yep.
It is weird, right? Like, you know, the talks of Brock Lesnar coming back. Like, I'm not excited about the thought of Brock Lesnar coming back and the fact that I'm like, man, can you imagine if Brock comes back and we match him up with, there ain't a name. But I wouldn't hate it either. Like, I've kind of come – It's funny because it's been 10 years since Brock first debuted. And when he first came to the UFC, I'll never forget, I was the purist. I was like, fuck this, man. We don't need Brock. This WWE guy. Oh, man, I hated it. We don't – this WWE guy coming in the UFC. Like,
oh, granted, so you love the Frank Mir one.
I loved it. Mazzagatti's my dog, boy. You know what I'm saying? You know? No, you know, it's just – you know, and understandable that, you know, he did have legit collegiate, you know, wrestling background credentials. It's not a CM Punk situation. No offense to CM Punk, because I'll be honest with you, I'm okay with CM Punk fighting again too.
Uh-huh.
I'm okay with the idea of Brock Lesnar coming back because I get it. I feel like we're no longer in a position where we need to worry that MMA and wrestling, people don't know the difference. I think people do know the difference. And I feel like I'm okay. I don't understand why Brock Lesnar is as big of a star as he is. I'm not going to lie. I don't understand why he's as big of a star as he is.
No, man,
but you know what? I can't deny it. I see the clicks. I see the video views. I see the response. So he is a star. So if he wants to fight in the UFC again, I'm okay with that because I feel like it gets the O'Malley's, the Dearns, the Ortegas, maybe a few eyeballs that somebody will hang on to.
Well, I feel like it used to be a situation in which the UFC could get somebody like Brock Lesnar. It's like, here's a gift. Here's a gift of some guy who is massive, coming over from the WWE. But now it's almost like they're relying on that. It's almost like, oh, all these great fights have been going on, but no one cares. So here's Brock Lesnar. You know, the feeling of Brock Lesnar has changed. When Brock Lesnar first came in, it was like, oh, this is exciting. Let's see what happens. Now it's like a lifeline being thrown out to the sport.
True.
You know, and the UFC –
George St. Pierre in similar fashion, right? I mean,
The UFC needs to ask itself, like, if the biggest fights we can put on are a WWE guy who has only fought once in the last, 5 years, and George St. Pierre who's only fought once in the last 5 years, what are we doing wrong? I mean, they need to address that. And, again, I don't know what the answer to that is because, like I said, their product is very good. But they need to find out what the answer to that is, man, because that's not good if your biggest fight of last year was Conor McGregor in a boxing match and George St. Pierre coming back to fight Michael Bisping, man.
That's tough. Well, we're talking about a lot of tough things. Cold Coffee, you know what's easy?
What?
Health IQ is easy.
Health IQ is easy.
The MMA Roadshow is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians – not like us, get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/road to support the show and get your free quote.
It's all about better science, guys. Health IQ spent years gathering the science and data to prove the health conscious deserve lower rates. Over 1 million people took their Health IQ quiz and formed the basis for the scientific analysis of the relationship between health and health knowledge. They took all the years of data and science on the health conscious to the top carriers and partnered with them to get the lowest rates on life insurance for the health conscious.
That sounds pretty complicated, but let me break it down. What it is, you reach out to the folks at Health IQ, and they take you on a journey. They learn about your lifestyle. They learn about your choices. Like when I called them and explained to them my lifestyle and my choices, they hung up on me, as they should have. But for most people –
they wouldn't hang up on
you. No, they didn't hang up on me. I'm kidding. I love the people at Health IQ. For most people, what they do is they kind of learn about you. You can do things like take lifestyle quizzes. You could submit actual data like race results. If you do like Runkeeper, apps like that, you could submit that data. And it's kind of like getting good driver rates when you call an auto insurance company and you explain to them, you know, you've got this track record. What is it, Progressive, that does that thing where they track your driving around?
Yes, that's true.
It's exactly what it's like. They take actual real data and they go, oh, my gosh, this guy is not John Morgan. We should give him a low insurance rate. So if you're health conscious, they will help you out with the underwriting so everyone understands the specific stats and information.
To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/road. Or mention the promo code ROAD when you talk to a Health IQ agent.
All right, Brett, well, listen, since we've been talking about all these kind of, you know, just keeping it low-key, fun, having a good time, talking about things.
Have we been having fun? I feel like we've been talking about some pretty heavy topics
here.
Heavy.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I just want to keep it in the same vein with just this kind of, you know, high
heavy
energy, fun stuff.
All right.
You were at the John Jones hearing.
I was going to say, let's talk drug shit.
I was at the John Jones hearing.
let me get your impression. Myself and Cole Coffee, the way that we wanted to be there, number one, I will say, but there was just the way the schedule worked out, unfortunately, we both had to kind of stay back. We've had some staffing issues over the last couple of weeks. They've been made junky. They've been kind of tough to deal with. But
the jet,
the junky jet was a little low on fuel.
The engine
was getting serviced. It was getting serviced. So we had to stay home. We had to watch it. We had to watch the feeds that everybody was out there providing. But
thank you, MMA Media, that actually covered it.
Thank you, MMA Media, streaming it. But I wanted to ask you kind of what your feel was. And I mean, obviously, we could sit here for hours and talk about this. But I want to get your overall feel because it was such a weird and heavy situation. And I, from the beginning, have said I thought John Jones was going to get 2 years. That's been my prediction from the beginning. And the weird thing is, I honestly don't think John Jones is a cheater. I really don't. Now, whether you want to call it bad luck, whether you want to call it just him not paying attention to what's going on,
he calls it science.
Science, whether you call it science kicking his ass, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But I was shocked that there was not more of a defense. I mean, listen, I have been in situations where I have made some mistakes with my wife, with my parents when I was a little kid. Where you just go, listen, I got no explanation. I'm sorry. Please just have mercy on me, and I'll be better moving forward. I get that. I mean, there's some degree of humility, I guess, in that approach. But there was nothing to me that just thought, wow, this is a great argument. This is good for him. And man, you know, the whole admission of I didn't do my online USADA training, which I got to think USADA is going to be pissed off about. Now, let's be honest, it's probably 99% of the roster doesn't do their own USADA training. If they have managers, they probably handle it for them. But yeah. I don't know, man. I was watching on a stream, and of course, because of that, I was watching Twitter as well, so I was seeing the comments. And you know, just like watching a fight, there's a different feel between being cage side than there is watching on TV or being in the back or whatever. So I wanted to pick your brain real quick on that, kind of what feel you got from that and what you expect to see moving forward with John Jones.
Yeah, I mean, being right there in person, I was literally sitting like 5 feet from him when all this was happening. Look, at the end of the day, I think that what was going to happen was going to happen, man. He was going to get his license revoked and he was going to get fined because he can't account for the substance being in his body. So if you don't have a defense and you know that, then you have to be anticipating certain types of questions. And I felt like John Jones was not prepared to answer those questions. And where the blame lies as to is it on John? Is it on his management team?
The attorney himself?
The attorney, Howard Jacobs, who has a very good track record when it comes to this. Look, you don't have a defense. So smart people would acknowledge that and be like, we don't have a defense. So we're going to go in and we're going to basically say, look, we can't account for this. But here's why, and John kind of did that, but he did that in almost a naive way where he didn't really expect any cross-examination.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that was the big failure. He was going to get his license revoked. If you can't account for a banned substance in your body, you're going to get your license revoked. You're going to get fined. So that's going to happen. The question is, can you spin it into a positive public reaction or a negative public reaction. And I don't think he had a positive public reaction whatsoever, because he just was not prepared to answer any of those questions.
Did it feel uncomfortable in the room? Did it feel awkward?
Well, you know, I will say that I thought John handled himself relatively well, because a couple things stood out about that hearing. One is that John, just like the last time, when he got suspended for the two anti-estrogens, you got the strong feeling from John that he only cared about and I shouldn't say only, because of course he cares about how long he's suspended, but he cares if people know or not whether he was intentionally cheating or not.
True. You're right.
And he was like almost obsessed with like reminding people, like, hey, USADA found out, you know, the arbitrator said that I didn't cheat. I was just reckless. And he was like almost obsessed with saying that. And at the hearing for this positive drug test, it was very similar, and it reminded me of that, because he was like, I don't know where this came from, and I didn't do anything wrong. And so that's almost all he cared about. So I thought he handled himself like pretty well when it comes to that, because he never wavered from that. But again, even if that is your stance and that is what you truly believe and that is what you want to convey to people, you still have to anticipate certain questions being asked of you, and he was not prepared for those. And so when those questions came, then it got awkward, and he kind of got a little bit you could tell he was getting like a little bit testy, and he was getting sick of these guys asking him personal questions and like bringing up his past and this or that, because in John's mind, it's just very as simple. It's black and white as, did I cheat or not? Right. Did I try to cheat or not? And I didn't, you know? And it's like, yeah, that is the crux of this matter, John. But it is also like, if you can't account for that substance in your body, then your past is going to come up, and you need to be prepared to answer those questions.
I agree. I saw a lot of people that were like, I can't believe the CSAC is asking these type of questions or whatever. But to me, granted, it's not a court of law or whatever, but if your defense is, I have no defense, I don't know what happened, then of course the other side is going to lay out a pattern of behavior, right? I mean, that's natural. I mean,
because that's your defense.
Exactly.
It's your word.
Exactly. You'd love to have the incident be on trial, quote unquote, air quotes there, so to speak. But if there is no real argument, then it's your character at that point, right? Yeah. It's like, hey, you know me, I wouldn't do something like this. And yeah. I hated seeing
it. I appreciate it. I appreciate their line of questioning, and I appreciate that it seemed hard at times. And we've heard Pat Lundvall try to be the bad girl, the hard ball at times, and it just comes across weird and awkward. Most people always attack Pat. But the way that the commissioner asked the questions, people are like, oh, okay, that's a legit question. That's a good question.
Other than the Stephen A. Smith discussion.
Well, that's a whole other story. That was so awkward and weird. I'm sure you as an ESPN person appreciated that. But I like the fact that when they asked the question, she asked a pointed question, just wanted them to explain. Even the fact when, you know, it got a little weird, but it was like, all right, well, tell me how you've changed. Give me examples. You know, and he'd say something, but give me specific examples. You know, I liked how they pushed on him, because it got to a point where they're like, all right, you're speaking in generalities. You're telling us you've changed. You're telling us you're becoming a new person. How? Mm-hmm. How has that changed? And even I appreciate the fact that they're like, have you thought about management change? Have you thought about maybe changing the fact of who you surround yourself around? And it felt to me when I watched it that it was the lawyer and him had talked on the phone and said, all right, I know you have a reputation. Management probably found this lawyer for him and said, this guy's good. He's got a good track record.
And he is. Howard Jacobs is well-known.
Yeah. And it just felt like they were like, all right, John's like, I don't want to do an open statement. I don't want to do whatever. Can you just ask me questions?
What was that all about?
Can you just do it?
He didn't have a statement.
Yeah.
He didn't have an opening statement.
It was weird. I thought maybe he would come and at least had felt like he had thought about it. Whether even that morning on the plane ride or the train, off the cuff,
man, you just like
come speak from your heart,
and
be able to speak from his heart and have to be like, I'm not sure where to begin. Can you ask me questions? Then it felt like, okay, it's been somewhat scripted in the sense of what he was going to do, but it also just felt like they didn't practice it.
Might be some people out here listening to this podcast saying like, oh, what's the big deal? You know, John Jones is like, hi guys, like I have nothing to hide. Ask me any questions. There are probably some people out there listening to this right now who are just like, well, what's wrong with that? Dude, You have an opportunity. Like everyone wants to hear from you, John.
Yeah.
You can bring up like scientists and whatnot.
God, how hard was that to deal with being in the room? Like being able to tune it up, that was so hard to watch.
That you, the scientists, like, you don't have anything to say, man, mm-hmm. because you didn't find to take in a supplement. So anything that you say is all just speculation anyway. The first hour of that hearing was completely worthless because it was just like, oh, well, right. we think that this might happen or that might happen. Well, it's all speculation. So
shut up.
We just want to hear from John. And when John gets up there and his – like, dude, your career is on the line. You are the greatest fighter of all time, and you don't have an opening statement.
Not good.
Yeah. Like you haven't thought about this more than an hour, like you couldn't come up with something.
I think you saw it. It gives a minimum of 2 years. All right, so here's why.
But did you feel it was weird? I mean, I don't know. The worst part that freaked me out was the fact that the commission, besides revoking his license, didn't impose anything else besides a huge hefty fine.
Right.
I thought that they would have at least tried to make sure that a minimum time had been set for them to be like, well, we'll see what USADA says. Just felt to me like there was a lot of behind-the-scenes talk that had happened. Even the commissioner – or, I'm sorry, the guy that came out and put his recommendation for punishment, I felt there were a lot of behind-the-scenes conversations that happened because the guy could have went a lot harder. For him to be like, let me just come out and say, I like the guy.
Yeah, you're talking about Andy Foster, who is a guy that, by the way, is very – I mean, one of the most committed and professional and proactive guys out there. And you know, and you know what? I'll let Brett answer this one, and then I want to get to something else with Brett. But, I mean, because Brett, I think, to be honest, if I remember looking on social media, I think somebody asked you point blank, what do you think is going to happen? And you were like, fine and revocation. And this was like before anybody started talking. So you nailed it on the head. Cole Coffey saying, listen, I feel like this was probably set ahead of time. Obviously not going to ask you to reveal your sources or anything like that. But do you feel pretty much – because I think you even – just now you said, listen, what was going to happen was going to happen. So you feel like that was pretty much a predetermined thing regardless of what was said there?
Yeah, unless John came up with some crazy because I knew – Just speaking to people who were around this case, I knew that let's just say this. It did not surprise me that Andy Foster came out at the end and said, I believe that – and look, I don't think anybody wants to come down on John Jones. I think that's what we're talking about. And so for your point, Cold Coffee, to say that it surprised me that they didn't put on a specific time frame, I don't think anyone wants to be – the bad guy, the body that comes down on John Jones, because I do think that there is a lot of people, experts, all the experts that I've talked to, who say it doesn't look like he was actually trying to cheat. Like if he was cheating, then he got terrible, terrible advice, and he's an idiot. You know, that's kind of what it comes down to, and so no one really wants to be the organizational body or the regulatory body that
puts him on the shelf for 2 years or 4 years.
Yeah, John stops Jones. A person from
so I think California kept their options open. They revoked his license. He can't reapply for a year.
And they could turn him down if they wanted to.
Exactly. It just keeps all their options open.
Right.
And so they kind of like give it to USADA. And so now we'll see what USADA does. And I agree with you that I think it's more than likely 2 years. I kind of thought less than that before the hearing. But I think once you go out in a public hearing and it's just – You offer nothing.
Right.
You offer no defense. Then,
and it's the second time you've offered no defense. I mean, the dick pills or whatever. Not that that was no defense, but it's a very flimsy. Like you know, it shows a pattern. It shows that you're careless and reckless.
Yeah,
it shows that you're careless and reckless.
So let's answer the question that really everybody wants to know: when is John back, and who does he fight?
2 year fine or 2 year suspension, and he fights Brock Lesnar, who still has suspension to serve too.
So he fights Brock. So the suspension starts in August of
July
2017.
Yes, it'll be August 2019.
That's a long way away.
That is a long ways away.
It is, jeez. But when you think about it, when you think about what the pattern, what could be, when we've thought that the there could be a 4 year, to think that we can still see him before the end of next year doesn't seem like a long time.
I think 4 years would be too much, but I do think 2 years.
The fact that John Jones and Alexander Gustafsson have not fought again is probably in my top three of tragedies in this
criminal
sport.
Right? Oh, my God, what a great fight. All right, so here's what I want to ask you, Brett. After that hearing, and I've started to see a little bit of it moving, but I feel like after that hearing it increased even more so. I feel like among the MMA media, there's this new thing where it's like, basically almost shitting on MMA drug testing, like saying like we don't need this. This is silly. This is dumb. And I'm not saying this is the majority of people, but I feel like it's a more pervasive attitude, a more pervasive opinion than it's been before, that like we don't need to be drug testing. And granted, I'm a little slow to change sometimes. Maybe I'm kind of a purist again. I was the guy that hated Brock Lesnar coming to the UFC. Now 10 years later, I'm okay with it. But to me, and I've always said this, and maybe it's an old-fashioned point of view or whatever, but I've always said, like, listen, I really don't care if you shoot up drugs to hit a ball over a fence. I really don't care if you shoot up drugs to ride a bicycle as fast as you can. I don't care. But in a sport that at the end of the day is hand-to-hand combat, as much as we, you know, try to push that aside sometimes, try to push that rhetoric to the side and try to say that this is a sport, which it is, it is still hand-to-hand combat at the end of the day. And I feel like I get it, man. People are always going to push the envelope, push the envelope, push the envelope. But I do feel like limitations need to be set. Am I silly and old-fashioned? Am I silly for not coming around to like, hey, maybe we just need to understand if we get guys that are juiced to the gills, who cares? Because we're seeing the best athletes we can.
I don't know. Well, I would say that I don't think you want to see sports in general, all those sports, become tainted with whatever. Because I think there is the ultimately, you want to see athletes. I think that's what makes great athletes stand out, is the fact that you can be clean and still rise to the sport. I don't think you're promoting the fact that you want cycling to become fully juiced to the gills.
It doesn't matter.
But I get it. This is life and death. When it comes to hand-to-hand skills, it's life or death.
I hate to say that, but it can be.
I always think of like Ivan Drago in Rocky.
Right.
Rocky was the clean guy, and everybody was so enwrapped and so like, I want the good guy to win. I think that's what this sport, even as much as others, you want the clean athlete. You want the real guy that's put all the blood, sweat, and tears in it to be the guy that overcomes and that wins the day.
Well, I just want to make sure that it's a level playing field.
I think if we're being completely honest,
yeah.
The biggest fear is that someone gets hurt and then someone pops.
Right.
That's probably the biggest.
And let's just be honest. It's not someone hurts. It's someone dies.
Yeah.
And the other guy pops.
I think actually if all the cards are on the table and we're being honest with ourselves, I think that's probably what the biggest need is for drug testing is because guys cheat in every sport, but we're dealing with a sport where someone could die. And if someone dies and then someone fails a drug test, well, then we're out of business.
Right. Thank goodness at least there's good referees. There's people that step in. If somebody becomes incapacitated, the great thing about this sport is that a ref's job will stop the shit from going further. But there is still the degree that if somebody is juiced to the fucking gills against somebody that's clean, and if it is giving them an advantage that they could disable their opponent,
man,
and
it ain't up to the referee. It's one awkward slam and one guy lands on his head and he's dead.
Yeah,
you know?
That's it. And I don't want to.
But that can still happen with clean athletes.
I don't want to think I'm old-fashioned.
But it would suck that if it was dirty.
I get it, man. People are going to do the best thing. I understand. Like, why is it that you can take, you know, certain protein powder? Like, why is it that you can do certain things and not other things? I mean, I get it, man. All that is very complicated. And I feel like USADA needs to be way more transparent than they are. I feel like they're not doing necessarily the best possible job. I feel like they need to be way more transparent than they are. I feel like they need to be more open and honest to us and more forthcoming and everything that's out there. I feel like sometimes it's like trying to get behind this wall or whatever. And I know it's frustrating.
It's like they're trying to keep their payer happy.
I get it. And Cynthia Calvillo popping positive for marijuana. Like, come on, man. I don't care if somebody smokes weed. I mean, I feel like there are changes that need to be made. I feel like this thing needs to continue to develop and it needs to get better and better. But I feel like there's this like attitude that's starting to seep up through the cracks a little bit. That's like, bro, we need to get rid of USADA. This is silly. This is bad for the sport. And I don't feel that way. I feel like it's still necessary.
I don't feel that way either. But man, there's we're talking about issues where there's no right answer.
You thought you were just gonna come drink a couple of Ballast Points and hang out.
I thought so, man. I'm never gonna text John and be like, hey, man, you want to have a couple beers again? Because we get into these.
You want to day drink and solve the world problems?
Yeah, we are solving some complicated shit here. There's not a right answer. You find a guy who tests positive for trace. I'm talking about trillions of a whatever. Like we're talking about like finite science here. You found traces of something, of a metabolite, of a banned substance. We're not even talking about you found the banned substance. Oh, you found a steroid in this guy's system. No, you found trillions of amount of a steroid of a metabolite of a steroid.
Right.
You know, but there's not a great answer to that. Like, yeah, you found it, and so now you have to go into this process. I think probably the best thing is. Make the process of appealing it as easy as possible, as cost effective as possible. You've been found of having this or that, you know.
Yeah, bro. What about
it? Costs money to
Russians
do this
that were out $10,000 and oh my, you know what I mean? That's tough.
At the end of the day, I still think this sport is better off with USADA than not.
There you go.
I think that if a major injury happens, that it's better to say, hey. We ponied up all the millions of dollars to do this. I think what Bellator is doing by ignoring this and quite frankly kind of running in the face of it, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it still reminds me of the Kimbo Slice situation, mm-hmm. where he was scheduled to go fight in London, even though he had been found of a banned substance. Like, that is bullcrap, and eventually you just hope that doesn't end in a tragedy that Bellator then has to answer for. But I think UFC is doing the correct thing. However, there are very, very, very legitimate complaints about the USADA program and the length of time it keeps you out and the cost that goes into it.
Mm-hmm. The time it takes to return
information. I don't know what the answer yeah. is.
But
to
it does seem
that.
Better to have it because, I mean, I think of anybody out there complaining the fact of, oh, I was really looking forward to this card and so-and-so fighter got popped and now I can't get it and I'm so pissed off that they exist. I just wish they would go away.
That's a chicken shit.
I mean, it's just bullshit because at that point, you know, you even listening or as an just want entertainment, got to still realize that these are people, these are real lives that are involved in this sort of thing. And like you said, you want an even playing field. You want to have some legitimacy to what is going on. Yeah, it sucks. A fight might get called off. And as for, like, the punishments and time length, that's a whole other thing that's for people much smarter than myself. But for the fact that there needs to be somebody that's at least paying attention to look at the athletes that are going in there, if you're willing to go in there and go mano a mano or womano versus womano, you know, and have somebody across from you, you want at least to understand that the person opposite of you has done the right things and done the legit things and so that you're on an even playing field. I think with the greatest thing about martial arts, you know, you test yourself to a certain level and you want it to be about that, not just an entertainment level that is basing on why these people are able to do what they do and all the rules.
You made a great point. At the end of the day, if you're a 20-year-old coming into the UFC, do you feel like you're on a more even playing field than you were 10 years ago? Do you feel
Absolutely.
Like, oh, I have to take steroids in order to be competitive? Right. No, you probably don't. And that's a positive. Right?
I agree.
Yeah.
All right, listen, I should say, if you like what you're listening to right now, which you should because, I mean, Brad Okamoto in this bitch just handling business.
Right?
That's what's up. What you should do, you should go to iTunes. You should, like, search frantically to find Five Rounds Podcast. It's not easy to
it's
find.
Not that hard
no,
to find.
I'm just kidding.
It ain't that hard
you,
to
you
find.
Should subscribe to his podcast, of course. And, of course, along the way, you should make sure you subscribe to the MMA Roadshow. Do us a favor. Give us a few likes. Leave us some feedback if you want. I'm sure Brett would say the same for Five Rounds as well. I will say this. We're also doing something a little different this week. We're launching Patreon.com. We've talked about it. We've made the decision. We've discussed it.
Or in French,
it.
That would be Patreon.
Maybe it is. listen, bottom line is this.
Patreon. That sounds so, like, fancy.
For the past 3 years, the content here has always been free, and it's going to continue to be free. I don't want to charge people for content. We are just a couple of idiots with a frosty beverage and some MMA talk. So I don't want to charge anybody for that. But I will say this. There are costs behind the scenes. There are things like, buying the equipment, as we're talking about. The headphones that we use are $600 headphones.
They're some nice headphones.
They're nice, but it makes sure, right? Aren't they comfortable? And the sound quality is nice, and we want to get another one. So we could have two guys. We could have four people on a round table. That's something we want to do. Just doing things like hosting the website itself, hosting the podcast on different servers, being able to – it costs money. We want to do upgrades. We want to do things like video, man. Like if you wanted to see right now what it's like at the Casa de Cold Coffee, We could have that.
That's right. That would be a super, super expensive.
Yeah, but more probably when we're on the road is probably what you'd rather see.
Like, you don't want to see my living room.
More far-flung destinations. But we want to do that. It costs money, and so we're going to keep the content free, but if you happen to love the show and you're willing to dig deep into your pocketbooks and give us a couple bucks a month, we would really appreciate that. And I promise you, we will work hard to earn every dollar that you contribute to us. What you can do, go to www.patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow.
Nice and easy to remember. I will put a link on the website as well. You know, like, this has just been coming together. We've been talking about this for, it feels like, forever. Mm-hmm. We thought about the idea to do it, and today we finally really squared it up. And I'll put a link on our website, and so make it easy for you guys to link to this. But, you know, it's one of those things that we never thought we wanted to do, but ultimately I think it's one of those things. It just helps because we want to find a way to make things better. We throw things together, what we can, what we do. That's how we do it. It's not like we'd ever charge for what we do. I mean, that's not what this is about. It's not about taking the and a half shows, even though it's been suggested to put those behind a paywall, which makes a lot of sense. But that's also, we know the shit that you guys love, and we don't want to take the shit that you guys love away from what's free and whatever. But it's about making things better. Man, I would love to have, I was telling John, I would love to have one of those 360 cameras so I could sit in front of us. So while we're sitting in whatever random last location in whatever fucking country we happen to be in, mm-hmm. you could watch us stream and talk all the bullshit, even the stuff that never makes it to a show, but be able to just scroll and see around the bar, see around whatever hotel room.
And we can have live interactions.
And we can have live interactions and stuff. And that's hopefully what we're driving to.
Yep.
And whether or not you want to pull your wallet out, we'll probably still drive towards that way regardless. But you guys have always been great, and it's for you that we do this stuff, and it's for you that we lose all the fucking sleep in the world and all the stuff when we go to the airport, but it would be great. So this is just another way that we reach it out. I mean, this is not us saying, like, you guys have to do this, but for those of you that have reached out to us and said, is there any way we can help out with the show, this is a way for you guys to help out. So we set this up today. And it is now live, so feel free to hop on there. And,
there you go, patreon.com/the MMA Rojo. And you'll see some things. People that are committed to the family, trust me, we're going to take care of them, all right? We're going to do things. We're going to let them help direct the show at sometimes. Like, this is a freebie here because he got in before the patreon.com. But my man Jay, and I don't know his last name here, but it looks like Gagliolo.
Is he Italian?
I don't know. I just threw that out there. But listen, he had this question, and I thought this was an interesting question, and he sent it to me a couple weeks back. I wanted to get you guys' take on this. Now, check this out. On episode 152, you mentioned that people often make the point that being on the UFC roster doesn't mean as much as it used to be now that there are 500 fighters on the roster. So, you know, when you say that's a UFC-level guy, right? Like, that used to mean something. But he says this. Given that overall skill level has risen and the strategy has evolved so much, you could make the case that the quality of fighter at the bottom of the roster is comparable. Most guys who make it to the UFC now are very, very well-rounded. The gyms they come from have advanced leaps and bounds. They or their coaches have had the benefit of having watched thousands of high-level fights to refine strategy and technique. Do you think fighter number 492 on the roster now would give, say, fighter 98 from 2006 a good fight? I think UFC level has stayed about the same, but more and more fighters are now able to clear the bar. Having more fighters certainly makes for a more watered-down product, but it's because we can only pay attention to the top X number of fighters regardless of how many there are on the roster. I thought this was kind of an interesting question, right? Because, you know, in the past, you say, oh, that's a UFC-level fighter. That's a UFC-level fighter. Now, it's not as exclusive of a club, right? Like, I mean, it's not 80 guys or 100 guys or 120 guys. You know, I mean, now it's 600 guys and girls, I should say. I'm not trying to be sexist. I'm just being fast.
Yeah, which
in the
you
way.
Shouldn't, because today, by the way, let's give prop to the ladies, International Women's Day.
Yes,
I think there
you.
Was probably a point that the UFC decided to release that fight announcement today because it is so, yes.
Cyborg Pennington, we're all looking forward to it.
So we got to give props to the ladies. Thank you, Agent H. To the ladies in our lives, but yeah.
Good that
so.
I ditched my wife all day. Good call, Morgan. I did well. All right, so what do you guys think? I just thought this was kind of an interesting topic because I have some people say that, like, to say a guy is a UFC-level fighter, you know, if a guy comes in and gets his cup of coffee in the UFC or whatever, like, it doesn't mean anything anymore. And I think this is interesting. You know, the guy that's at the very bottom of the roster versus the very bottom of the roster in 2006 is probably a hell of a lot better fighter. There's no question about it. So, does UFC-level fighter still have any meaning to it?
Nah, who cares? Who cares?
The Aloha Sculpins are flowing for Brett.
Throw whoever you want on a UFC fight card. I mean, it's still from a casual perspective, it means something. If someone's in the UFC, you expect something out of them. But we know, as people who follow this sport very closely, that UFC caliber is a very gray area.
Right.
I mean, is CM Punk a gray area? And you always hate saying that because you're like, I don't want to crap on CM Punk. That was a very, very specific situation in which, yeah, his debut needs to be on a big scale and it's money making. But what is UFC caliber? UFC caliber has reached the point of well, we may need a guy on 7 days' notice. Well, we want to sign this person because we want to have them under contract, even though they're not ready to face the top, because we need to get them under contract. Because if we don't get them under contract, then they're going to end up in somewhere else. So UFC caliber is a relative term. It means whatever you want it to mean. Quite frankly, it does.
That's a good point. I didn't really think
about that. I will say this, though. Take the – and I don't want specific names, so don't – it's probably CM Punk. Take the worst guy on the roster. You know what? Take CM Punk out of the equation. That's not fair because he's not a lifelong
He's like an asterisk.
He is. He is. And Brett, you're probably agree with me, right? Like, CM Punk's a nice dude. Like, he's a good he's a good dude.
I am a CM Punk fan.
I am too.
Yeah, I am.
All right, so take him out of the equation. He's a special equation. Take the whoever you think the worst guy in the roster is. Just don't say anything. Just put it in your mind, right? Don't say anything. Don't be that guy. Don't let the Sculpins be talking, all right? The worst guy in the roster. And then think back 10 years ago, whoever the worst guy on the roster there is, right? Like, I mean, the worst guy on the roster today, even though it's expanded 5 or 6-fold, kicks that dude's ass from 2006, right? Or 2008, Jesus Christ.
Well, I at least think that when you top to bottom look at the roster now, there's certainly a lot more fighters now that would fit under the category of well-rounded. Mm-hmm. I think when it started, you had people that were specialists. People, this was a jiu-jitsu guy. This was your striking guy. You know, now the level of a person entering the UFC, I think, has reached a point where you have a certain level. You have a certain level of competency when it comes to fighting. Even look at the latest Tough. The latest Tough, granted, they stretch for areas and things they want to look at. The latest Tough was about undefeated fighters.
Right.
They were hoping for, I think, 6 fights. But I think there were some people that got in as low as 3 undefeated fights, but that was, like, maybe questionable or whatever. So I definitely think that, yes, while there is – and it's not like they're like, oh, roster number 498. It's not like they have an internal, like, banking order of number 1 to 520. That's not how they do it. They just fill the roster based on depending on the weight class. And even then they start doing their own little internal ranking. So it's not like 498 can beat number 16 because that's not the same thing. You know, it would never be that particular way. But the overall level right now, the fighters that – are coming in are at such a higher level. That's just the nature of the sport. That's just the nature of the fact that it's been around.
Look at Alexander Hernandez the other night. That dude that came in.
Right? And this is a guy that did like life insurance or mortgaging. He was like a loan originator or some crazy shit.
Please don't ever let me meet that dude in a dark alley.
It's unreal, but he can fucking get you a deal on some fucking houses or something. I mean, it's unreal the people that are coming in. So I think there is still something to the fact of whether there is this quote-unquote UFC caliber, because I think there's a level where they expect people to come in.
It's shattered. If Demi Lovato was like, hey, you know, I train on the weekends.
Oh, you put her in.
And I want to try a fight. You don't think Demi Lovato could get it?
But that's the thing. There is definitely still that entertainment side. I think they've gotten away. I think we realize when the way that these fights come up and there's the entertainment value, we've gotten away from it being a pure sport. That happened a while ago.
Oh, it happened
maybe a while back. Maybe that's when the roster was back.
The way you think about UFC caliber has to change. The way you think about UFC caliber now is that
I would totally watch Demi Lovato fight, by the way. She's fucking hot.
Yeah, I would too. God damn it. I would too. But the way you think about UFC caliber,
she refused a picture with my wife. She was training at Extreme Couture and she was rolling.
But that's
and so she was kind of sweaty and stuff. And I get it. She was self conscious. I don't even like pictures of myself when I'm like.
But I'd be like, bro, I'm in the gym, yo.
But she wouldn't take a picture with my wife. So
it's your time off. Demi Lovato.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
Answer me this: Is any famous person not UFC caliber?
Well, yeah, as you said, it's got to be what you mean by UFC caliber.
I don't want to see Meryl Streep fight.
Does that mean
Meryl
that
Streep shouldn't fight?
When you say are they UFC caliber in terms of talent level.
But somebody would pay for that.
No, they're not talent level. But are you saying that you wouldn't put them in? Because I will agree at this point. Like, for instance, the Floyd Mayweather discussion. I could give a I mean, dude, Floyd Mayweather would get embarrassed, and that's why he's never going to do it. But if he's saying, like, I'll take a UFC fight – hell yeah, put him in the UFC.
Yeah, because if he fights CM Punk, we would all fucking love to watch that fight.
Any famous person is UFC caliber at this point. Well, and that's just the reality of the world we live in.
It's true.
Right. Any famous person is UFC caliber. But I think like from a functional standpoint of what we're talking about, what is UFC caliber? UFC still employs the best fighters in the world.
Yes.
So, I mean, I guess is that what we're talking about? You know, UFC still has the best depth, the best talent. They have the best. They are the gold standard. So if that's what we're talking about, then that's an easy question to answer. They are still the gold standard. But anybody who has more than like 100,000 followers on Twitter,
UFC caliber.
Yeah.
So true.
Which is
sad but true.
Which is sad, but
it's sad because
it's 100% true.
You said the Demi Lovato thing, and that's outrageous. And
you haven't said a word since I said that. You've just been thinking about Demi Lovato fighting
nonstop, nonstop. But that's the kind of thing that, and it's shitty because I never thought about it. But the fact is that because she loves MMA. If they decided, oh, we're gonna put Demi Lovato against, or Bellator will probably do this. Demi Lovato versus Heather Hardy. Who wouldn't fucking watch it? And that sucks because that's a reality that could happen.
We're all tuning in, but that's it. I mean, this is – look, it's spectacle over sport. Yes, there's a sporting aspect to it, but it is spectacle, and it is about eyeballs, and it is about what's going to bring the most eyeballs to it. So I don't think you ever want to get total that way. You still have to employ the best fighters, and I think that's the challenge. But at the end of the day, you're right. All right, last question. Before we can put this up.
This is like the heaviest episode
ever. Oh, no, are we wrapping
ever?
Up?
Are we wrapping I know, you're like, bro.
We need to get you a drink, man.
Brett Okamoto, tell me this, because I see it in our comment section, and I see the people that get angry, but yet I also see the clicks. How long do we keep covering Ronda Rousey? As mixed martial arts journalists, how long and how much more do we cover of Ronda Rousey's career and what she's doing and where she goes and what her next movement is? Do we write her off and we say, listen, her time is done? How long do we keep going?
Well, the journalist in me who wanted to be a sports journalist since I was 10 years old and who went to college and paid money for an education and cares about sports journalism, it's over.
Right.
We're done now. But the sports journalist who lives in the world that we live in now, where clicks matter and advertisement dollars matter and traffic matters, I don't know. You know, maybe we continue to cover her career for, I don't know, as long as it goes. I mean, I would imagine that the interest will wane as far as mixed martial arts fans are concerned. Like, my interest has waned.
Right.
I'm happy for her, but I don't really care.
When you guys put up stuff on ESPN.com right now, it still delivers massive traffic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, honestly, man, that's a great question to ask after we've been sitting here drinking Ballast Points all day. Like, if you want my honest opinion, like,
now we're done.
That's part of what I don't like about sports journalism anymore is that we're like slaves to what
the traffic, right? To what's going to get clicks.
To what uneducated people who don't really actually care about this sport want to read about. Apparently, I'm happy for Ronda Rousey, and whatever she does in her WWE career, I don't care. As soon as she comes back to UFC, if she ever does, then I will care. But what she does in WWE, I couldn't care less.
So you're not looking forward to her and Kurt Angle versus Triple H and
Stephanie McMahon? What I do want to know is she's never answered any of these questions.
I don't want to take any shots at your ESPN colleague, Ramona Shelburne, but Ramona Shelburne, I think, as far as I would not consider her a mixed martial arts reporter. I understand that she has covered a couple UFC events and she has a good relationship with Ronda and she's done interviews. But I don't think that even if Ronda said, listen, open book, you can ask me anything you want. Let's do it. Let's knock it out. I don't think that she would necessarily understand all the questions that we want answered, that the MMA fan wants answered. So let me ask you that. Is that still of interest? Because I will say, I'm not going to lie, even as me, who I will say this, I don't understand the opinion where there's people that are like, Ronda owes us. She doesn't owe us anything. First of all, nobody owes us anything as media. We're there to observe. We're there to be there. But you don't have to talk to us. If you want to take advantage of the platform we provide, then go for it. But you don't have to.
Totally agree.
But I will say this. If Ronda would sit down and do one interview where she said, listen, I will not no comment anything. I will address anything. I will not take advance. My hand would be in the air so fast.
Of course.
Like, give me that interview.
Of course. That's what I would be most interested in is asking her those questions, you know, like why, when you said that MMA media turned their back on you, what did you mean by that? I didn't feel that whatsoever
at all.
And,
maybe why, the MMA comment section,
why are you ashamed? 'Cause you accomplished exactly what you wanted to accomplish. You were a champion in this sport and you left it in a far better place than it ever was. I would love to ask her those questions. And so, that is my interest as far as her WWE career, but I don't know how long will MMA Junkie cover Ronda Rousey's WWE career. John, if we're having an honest conversation, I believe that it will last a while.
Forever.
I believe that they will talk about it for a long time.
Yeah, no, I agree. Dude, MMA Junkie is going to keep talking about it for a long time. Trust me, it still gets views. And even when people click in just to say F you Junkie, which the last bit, like, you still click, bro. So we're cool with that. You know, I'm not as interested anymore. I mean, I guess maybe like her first – to me, I guess maybe her first actual appearance or something. I mean, like, I don't know, man.
Let me ask you a few
questions. We didn't go to the event the other day. We tried. You know, she was here in Las Vegas, right? She was at T-Mobile.
She shuts it down. Yep.
And I reached out to WWE. In fact, I even reached out to some former WWE employees who work with the UFC now and said, what kind of access can we get?
Yep.
I get it maybe limited, but can we do 2 or 3 minute video, something like that? And I was told, no, we can't have any access.
Yep.
And so we said, well, I mean, so we didn't even go.
Here, let me ask you a few questions. You've been asking me a lot of questions.
Right.
You ready?
I love this.
So when does Ronda Rousey answer these questions about her career, if ever?
Honestly, I think she answers them at some point when she's got a book at like 40 years old or something. Like when
it makes her money.
Yes, when it makes her money, when her athletic career is done, her performing career is done, and now she's trying to be on the talk show circuit or something like that. I think that's the first time she answers it.
Okay. Do you think she ever fights again?
No. No, I don't think she wants it anymore. I think she, learned that the home fight wasn't a fluke, learned that her heart isn't in it anymore, and good for her, because from all accounts, she's pretty frugal with her money, and so she's got a bunch of it tucked away, and she doesn't need to fight anymore, and she loves this stuff at WWE, and she's having fun with it. I mean, we know the stories of when she was a kid, right, and the Hulk Hogan pillow that she used to wrestle with and all that, so
yep.
Good for her, man.
Yeah. Does Conor McGregor fight the winner of Khabib versus Tony?
Who wins? You know, listen, that's a good question. All right, so listen, I think he should, and I would love to see it. I think that he wants no part of Nurmagomedov. Dude, I think that's a horrible matchup for him. But, you know, here's the thing. You know, we did that interview last year, the famous interview with Dana where he dropped the, you know, Conor told me he wants to fight Khabib in Russia.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, no, he didn't. No, he did. You know, Conor's crazy. Conor wants those things. Now the people around him realize, maybe that's not the best thing for you. Man. Honestly, I think now, especially, you know, assuming the fight happens and he's stripped, I think the GSP fight's the first fight that's out there for him, right?
Don't say that, John.
That's the first fight that's out there for him. At least there's no. Listen, I'm not going to lie. I didn't like the GSP swooping in to cherry pick Michael Bisping, picking up the 185-pound belt, dropping it and leaving. Like, dude, I mean, all respect in the world for everything the GSP accomplished, but I hated that entire situation. Exactly, right? Just I will not even show you the hand gesture he made with with just his right hand that was moving horizontally near his crotch.
That's dirty.
No, you know what? Listen, he's looking for the biggest money fights, and if you can fight an old GSP versus either a Tony Ferguson or a Khabib Nurmagomedov, who comes off that fight just looking like a beast. I mean, those dudes are monsters. Not to say that Conor's not a monster. I'm not trying to take away from Conor. But Conor is in that that area where he gets to kind of pick and choose things the way he wants based on financial outcomes. And that's what. And honestly, I think financially, the bigger fight is the GSP fight. And probably less challenging, I mean, in a lot of ways.
Conor McGregor is 29 years old. Over-under on how many fights he has left in the UFC is set at four. What would you take?
First of all, that's a hell of an over-under right there.
Oh, I live in Vegas, so I know how the books work.
Four. All right, so GSP happens. Does Mayweather happen? No, Mayweather doesn't happen. Come on, that's not going to happen. Four. I go Nate. Under. Under. Yeah.
Nate Trilogy.
GSP happens. Nate Trilogy happens. And maybe eventually he challenges one other guy to reset. Maybe Holloway at 155, or maybe.
Wow, under four fights.
Under four fights. I mean, figure all those are going to be $15, $20 million fights for him, right? I mean, they're not going to be $100 million fights, but they're going to be $15, $20 million fights. He's only going to fight once a year. He's not doing two, three fights a year anymore. Dude, he's doing once a year. They build it up. Yeah, he does GSP. He does Nate Trilogy. I'd feel safe with a push. I'd go under, and I'd feel safe with a push. I don't think he does more than four.
Does he box Floyd Mayweather again?
Nah.
No?
Who cares?
Really?
Why do you want to see? You want to see that again?
Oh, I don't want to see it again.
Right. But the money's there.
You know what's funny? Over under on boxing matches, 1.5.
Nah, under. Definitely under. Because there's not another fight out there that makes sense. There's not another fight that makes sense. All right.
Man, any fight makes sense with Floyd. Well, with Conor.
With Conor. No, I agree. I mean, anybody would be in it, right? But, I mean, how do you sell it? I mean, you sold it. It became this massive thing. I get it. I mean, if we're being honest, I mean, the fight was fun, right? I hate the idea that, like, I hate phrasing it that Floyd was carrying him the first couple of rounds. But Floyd was definitely willing to give away those first three rounds. You know what I mean? He wasn't concerned. He knew.
Floyd was never worried.
Ever. Not one bit. Like, even in those first three rounds where you're like, oh, my God, Conor just won the first. Like, oh, my God, he just won the second. But it still
Conor
wasn't.
Conor did very well.
Did very
while
well.
Never threatening Floyd.
Exactly. But I just don't see how you put that together again. Ah, man. Another boxing match?
You put it together again. No problem.
Do people buy that again?
Yes.
Ah, you're so right. I mean, they're gonna watch Demi Lovato. You know what I mean?
Goddamn
they're
right.
Gonna watch CM Punk. They're gonna watch Cyborg Pennington. Yep. So, I mean, we're talking about fights there.
Yep.
It's gonna happen. All right. Is your segment over?
I felt like I had more, but then I got depressed when we started talking about Conor's future fights.
Well,
so,
I'm glad, you know,
I've lost my train of thought.
After 8 years in Vegas of not having a beer together, now you understand why, because I just was going to depress you the whole time. But Brett Okamoto, man, I think this was fun. Hopefully we can do it again. Hopefully we'll pick less depressing topics the next time out. We'll have some fun.
I mean, I live right down the street from where we're taping this. So, yeah, let's do it again.
What's the best way to people to find the Five Rounds podcast? Is there an easy website they
just
can
just find through? Me on Twitter, at B Okamoto, just like it sounds. Okamoto, O-K-A-M-O-T-O, B Okamoto, ESPN. On Twitter, I always pin the latest episode to my profile.
There That's you handy. Go. That is handy.
There you
we
go.
We should do that more often.
Fuck.
This guy's
years.
Got it.
He's
That's
got
why
ESPN
he's made it
insight.
To the Extra Special Podcast Network. We haven't.
Maybe extra. Extra. You network. That's, is that what you is that
yeah,
what you said?
That's what
about?
I'm going with.
It took you 2 hours to do it, but Extra Special Podcast Network. All right. I was waiting for that. That's good.
Good times. Good times. All right. Thanks for listening.
Moro Casino, America. like a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.